Welcome. The peace revolution now continues.
Breaker, breaker, 1-9. I'm in outer space with a microphone.
But I guess we could just start off by asking you who you are and a little bit about your background to help folks in the audience understand where you are and where you came from and how you came through your research and to the conclusions that you're speaking about today.
My name's Richard Grove, and I host a podcast, which is an online curriculum for adults. It's called The Peace Revolution. It's found at peacerevolution.org. And I also am a co-creator of a online global research community at tragedyandhope.com. And I was inspired to be here today because Van, who has encountered my work in the past, found it valuable enough and thought others might be interested in the Spokane area. And here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. So would you like to speak a little bit to your experience with insurance companies in the past prior to and through the events of 9/11?
Well, sure, because this is another anniversary going by of 9/11, where we still haven't caught the real criminals. People still don't fully understand the magnitude and the gravamen of the events that are still unfolding, that are all based and predicated upon the events of 9/11 and the official government story. I came into this situation as a kid who grew up in Western Pennsylvania, who went through 15,000 hours of public schooling. I graduated from college. I had started my own business during college and sold it. That prepared me for a life in corporate sales. I chose software because I could make the most money without breaking any laws or anything like that. It seemed like an honest business at the time, and it didn't seem to hurt anybody, as opposed to my friends who went to work for, say, pharmaceutical companies. So I had enough social awareness to know that there was some crookedness going on in the world. College had not told me about that, but I had just picked up from the news that the pharmaceutical companies were crooked. I unjustifiably felt that software was a safer bet for me, and it only took me, I don't know, 5 or 6 years to really find out I was wrong and naive on that one. I worked in New York City. Some of my clients were AIG, Marsh & McLennan, Merrill Lynch, Deutsche Bank, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan, all these different financial services companies that post-Glass-Steagall had merged with insurance companies. So many of these banks and insurance companies in the 90s and since the Great Depression legally had to be separated. And only international companies, I don't want to name any, but there are several banks and insurance companies that are merged overseas. And so this the change of Glass-Steagall in 1999 opened up this whole can of worms that I got myself into unwittingly, like a year out of school. So I had no idea of the historical impact. I just knew that there was a lot of opportunity there. So I went in and I engaged and I had integrity and I did my job well and I made a lot of money. And I thought that I had achieved all that I had set out to achieve, given my superficial American dream underpinning of education and media. I thought that I was living the dream. And then one day at work, I got a rude awakening. I was told that I was being fired. They didn't have to give me cause. They just, could conveniently terminate me. And it's a long story, so I'm cutting it short. But at that time, I'd been working on the 96th floor of the World Trade Center. My client, Marsh & McLennan, was the world's largest insurance brokerage, and we were building them specific software applications so they could take people out of the process and do all sorts of electronic trading, which provably, in 2004, they got busted by Elliott Spitzer. They had been using that software system to cheat their clients and other business partners out of hundreds of billions of dollars. So that's, a little bit on the insurance business and the crookedness that I didn't realize until after 9/11 through my research. Moving up to 9/11, I was delivering some documents that morning. I happened to be very close to that scene, and thankfully I was not there any earlier because I was supposed to be dropping documents during a break between two meetings on the 96th floor. So I witnessed the events of 9/11 up to the point of the second World Trade Center explosion, at which time I understood it wasn't an accident. I panicked and I removed myself from that situation because I had no idea how to keep myself safe. When you go from hearing that it's an accident to seeing it's a purposeful event of the sort that I've never been exposed to.
Absolutely. I mean, you're completely witness to those events on the ground. I remember in your transcript reading about that you witnessed events on the ground that told you, pretty much straight out that you, I mean, you already had some experience identifying intelligence operations and things like that, just being in the places that you worked and the geographies that you worked. Do you remember anything specific? Can you detail a little bit more about what you saw on the ground, maybe, that was indicated to you that the narrative that was coming out of the media might be a little contradictory?
My only awareness of our fine intelligence community in this country up until that point had been through interacting with them as clients at the places I worked. So I wouldn't have them as my accounts, but people I worked with a couple cubicles away would have to have special clearances to go to MITRE or one of these other defense contractors and sell them all the software that they need for their projects, right? So I didn't work federal. I worked commercial accounts. So I was very naive. Anything I had known about the intelligence communities was kind of either from working in that area, Northern Virginia, where a lot of that stuff goes on, or just seeing movies. And so at the beginning of, seeing what goes on, I'm listening, in the car at ground zero, looking up. I see the floors that, my friends and colleagues are working on are on fire. And my trustworthy radio is telling me this is an accident. At first it said it was a Cessna, or at first maybe it said it was a helicopter. Then they said it was a Cessna. And at no point had anyone indicated on the radio that it was terrorism, and nothing around me said that it was terrorism. And it was only after I made a left turn onto Vesey Street, which is between World Trade Center 1 and World Trade Center 7, that other events, there were too coincidental, too simultaneous, and too far apart to be legitimately connected, brought my attention to reality. And all of a sudden, contradictions start to appear. You see people who aren't panicking. You see people who are, getting out of vehicles dressed strangely as if they're going to go into a building that's on fire and get something out, not firefighters, right? So these types of things that you see, I mean, your senses are piqued. I mean, for the first moment in my life, I realized that I had not been told the truth about several things, because what I was being told on the radio all of a sudden did not correspond with the reality that's unfolding. And then when you continue to watch the news, again, gets away from that which exists, the artifacts that are existing for the evidence and the things that are, evidentiary to show the cause and effect so that you can come to a clear conclusion. All of that becomes muddled. Right away, they muddle the crime scene. They break all sorts of evidence collection protocols. Within a half hour later, before I can even get to my buddy's place to turn on the TV and tell him what's going on, before the towers even come down, if I recall, they're saying it's Osama bin Laden and it's Muslim terrorists. And I, just still had questions about how they could have all this information, and yet the event's ongoing. No evidence has been collected yet. And in hindsight, after that day, I mean, that obviously gave me a lot to think about. And I didn't, it didn't creep in right away, because you were just happy to get away from that situation and be alive, because so many people died that day. About a month later, I have to go through several ceremonies for the deaths of colleagues. So, going to St. Patrick's Cathedral, seeing Giuliani at the front telling and consoling all these families, there was just some things that I witnessed as far as the interactions of people before and after these events that led me to believe that I was not in on whatever was going on. So I started to look more closely. And what I found out was that American Airlines had been intersected with Marsha McLennan, my client, that day on the 96th floor of World Trade Center 1. A week prior, and in weeks prior, there were put options, stock trades, bets against those companies placed. And my question was, how did the Muslim terrorists do this? And in fact, there is no connection to the Muslim terrorists with the insider trading. It all goes back to our intelligence groups. It goes back to Buzzy Krongard. It goes back to Deutsche Bank. So there's all these things that I started to discover. And once I started to observe the situation objectively and take my personal emotional self out of that situation, not going from what I saw that day, but by going by the evidence that exists all over the place, continuing to this day, right? My subjective experience, the things that I see, those don't make good conversation pieces, because other people have doubt about, you're saying that, where's the evidence? That's why I like to stick to the objective, substantial evidence, because these are things that people find very hard to argue with. And then we have to continue taking that piece of knowledge and moving to the next step and moving to the next step. And then we can all see clearly on the same page what's going on. But we can't get there by taking the official story as gospel and not questioning it from the start. You have to go. And so the only reason I had that opportunity is because I was there to witness some of the contradictions, and the people that I was working closely with, whether it be my clients, Marsha McLennan, I forgot to mention this, was CEO'd by a guy named Jeff Greenberg, whose father was also the CEO of AIG, Hank Greenberg, who also sits on the Federal Reserve, who also sits on Blackstone Group and partners with Peter G. Peterson Group, Warren Buffett, and the Council on Foreign Relations. And so all of a sudden, I was getting a civics lesson in how the country really works by doing the investigation of where does the money flow, where did it go, who benefited, and who was behind this in a real, existing reality, objective way, not in some sort of propaganda to start a war of terror for the next 10 years, which is what the United States has done in the name of the victims of 9/11.
So you talked about, you know, getting the first bit of evidence and people's initial reaction and having to move forward from there. And that's something I think, you know, becomes troublesome. And how do you usually approach that? You talk about using objective evidence, but even with the, you know, surplus of objective, reality-based, you know, backed-up evidence that we have, that the official story is not the true story, people get really emotional when you bring that up. And how do you think, what have you found is the best way to get people past that point to kind of snap out of it? And
I have found, that's a great question, I found that by using a cyclical process of experimental learning, better known as praxis, I can get acquainted with that which exists. So for instance, let's clear our mental desk of all things related to 9/11, and we're just going to put a couple things on there that we can all agree on without any emotion. So my observations would be World Trade Center 1, World Trade Center 2, the Pentagon, and World Trade Center 7 were artificially impacted by something. They had explosions there. That's what we can all agree on. Now, what we can't agree on yet is what was the nature of those explosions and how did they get to be in those locations? So the official story, if that's a starting point for most people, it involves planes and hijackers. Now let's go and collect all the information that's relevant to the planes and the hijackers. Specifically, we are searching for non-contradictory identification. That is the process of thinking known as logic. These are all very simple schematics of how the mind works laid down by Aristotle. So they're tried and true for thousands of years. Existing reality exists. We are consequent and conscious of that. And that's why we're on a show right now trying to figure out the answers to these questions. So if I were to ask you, what are the ways that you can identify a commercial airliner? Because that's allegedly the transport system for the hijackers to impact with these buildings. Well, there's a tail number, there's serial numbers on each of the millions of pieces in the plane, there's a transponder, there's the red and green blinky navigation lights. There's all these, there's a, you know, black box, there's a radar signature. There's multiple ways to identify each and every one of the planes that were allegedly used. However, when you break down the general knowledge of each of those planes, the tail numbers, when they were in service, the flight numbers, when they were in service, you start to encounter many, many contradictions. The same happens when you try to identify who these alleged hijackers were, who had custody of the security tapes, who ran security at these sites. And you keep coming back to groups like Kroll Associates, who was owned by Marsha McLennan and AIG, and whose employee, John O'Neill, was Osama bin Laden's tracker at the FBI. And he lost his job shortly before 9/11 and was killed on 9/11 working for Kroll on a floor of the World Trade Center that was allegedly abandoned. So you keep running into these contradictions before you can even get a hijacker on a plane to impact a site. So that's where I started thinking for myself.
Now, did that new, I guess you could call it like a new consciousness that you found, did that influence your future job decisions or job opportunities?
Well, Van, that's a great question too. It didn't all happen at once. So it was like a slow peeling of the onion. And as I discovered more and more while I was still working at a corporate job for the next 2 years after 9/11, I continued to encounter highly refined grades of corruption, not only within the organizations that I had chosen naively again to work for. Again, I went to, you know, one of the companies I went to work for was called Legato, and they were selling a financial services product, a piece of software that was mandated by the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation of 2002. And that was enacted after Tyco and Enron and these other companies had cheated, you know, cooked their books. And the software was supposed to prevent these companies from cheating their clients and who are ultimately the 300 million people that are citizens of America, right? These are publicly traded companies who are cheating. So this software was supposed to stop that. So I thought, that's a great piece of software, and I can get behind it, and I can go into all these financial services companies, and we can make sure this never happens again. Tyco was one of my clients, and I met with the top lawyer in the company. It's an international company. They got thousands of employees. I met with the top lawyer. Her name is Valli Baldassano, or at least she was the top lawyer, the general counsel for Tyco at the time in 2003. And she told me plainly in a meeting that they didn't want to preserve this data that the FBI had mandated them. They're under investigation. They had been mandated to not delete their emails and these sort of things as a method of the Sarbanes-Oxley to preserve the documents so that the public could have integrity. And if things happen in the future, you could go back and acquire these pieces of documentation. So when they tell me that they don't want to keep this information, that they purposely want to get rid of it, and then I found out that my employer, that whoever designed the software, put a back door in it specifically so these companies could purchase the software, act like they're up to compliance, and now hide the fraud and obscure it from anyone else figuring this out. So the evidence of that going on is that you have a world financial crisis that really starts with the subprime loan crisis, which really starts with all these other companies doing dirty dealings and then getting rid of the original documents, which is why no one can find their mortgages and all these other documents are missing. There's 5 million emails missing from the Bush administration. All these types of missing information, that's a way to occult or hide powerful information from the public. And that's what allows the powers that be that are doing the, you know, use these types of tactics to create illusions and effectively steal the lives of billions of people. But we all have our five senses. We can all start to ask questions. And it's the power of the question mark that can free each of our individual minds from that which we've been conditioned unwittingly to believe. Because the greatest barrier to knowledge is not ignorance. It's the illusion of knowledge. So by having this illusion of knowledge instilled through 15,000 hours for the average person in America, public schooling, that's a tough racket to break. That's a tough habit to stop thinking in the authoritarian complex that we've all been instilled with, where without looking, we have been trained to think we know the answers. Without asking the questions, we've been trained to think we already know the answers. And it's how the ruling class, the non-elected rulers, not only of this country, but of every other country that's out there, this is how they manipulate human resources on a massive, massive scale. And they've refined this process for the past, 2,000 years. They've gotten better at it, but now the internet does offer the opportunity for more people to communicate directly, to speak and share the very relevant resources and the primary sources where you can get in touch with this information, because what I'm expressing is not my opinion. It's the result of 40,000 hours of my own time invested into figuring out what is going on so that I can create maps for other people whereby they can improve them themselves. But the idea is there are pitfalls in this not so fun theme park that they've created, and we can create a map for each other to help us avoid these pitfalls. But the map we're given in public schooling is definitely designed to lead us into all these different pitfalls and quagmires and places where we lose our volition. And that's the whole name of the game. The only war that's ever gone on in humanity is the war to suppress consciousness, and it's waged versus those of us who seek to express consciousness. And once we can all grasp that and stop outsourcing our thinking and learn how to learn anything ourselves by asking questions, substantial questions, and finding valid answers, then we can truly be free as individuals. And I think if 9/11 has a legacy, that's what it should be. It should not lead toward a collective, shouldn't lead into an Agenda 21 Brave New World. It should lead back to a place where people know how to be self-reliant and protect themselves from predators.
Awesome. And hopefully, I think that's really well put. And it also allows us to, get in touch with each other and, branch out even further. So
if I could go back to the idea of like authority and collectivism through the public schooling system, being that that's our foundation between you and I and pretty much everybody else who's had to go through public schooling. Taylor and I talked in the two-part education series she had a few months back about the influence of philanthropies and publishing companies and in textbooks and lectures and all of these things. You mentioned the methods that professors use when they lecture, how they set up basically the answer before they give you the question. That's definitely firsthand experience there. And we talked about, I believe you sent me a link to like the Norman Dodd video about the Reese Committee. We even talked about that. And But, I mean, you open up these textbooks, and especially like geopolitical classes, or what they call international studies now, they all start with that narrative. It's usually within the first two chapters of the book, if you had to take any course in international politics, it's the 9/11 narrative is put straight there.
Well, one of the things I found most surprising during my years of research thus far has been the cliched use of terms like, well, the Rockefellers took control of public education, or, you know, so on and so forth. And for years, it was the use of these cliches that were not substantiated by the primary resources that allowed me to deny them effectively and to say, that just sounds too overly simplistic for me to take as my own reality, so I'll have to just keep looking on my own journey until I bump into something credible. Well, in the last couple of years, I bumped into so much credible information that makes that simplicity, it's overtly simple. There are foundations that were created by mega international corporations like Carnegie and Rockefeller, whose specific tasks in their meeting notes and their agendas, and it's been proven over time, was to subvert the self-reliance of America, to change our values to that of collectivism, to get away from the rights and the property and the cause and effect of individuality, because they can't manage individuals effectively. They have to strap this public schooling on us so that we will think like the rest of the collective. And that's why it takes 15,000 hours. You can teach someone to read in a couple hundred hours, and once you teach someone how to read and ask the right questions, they can get for themselves a world-class education for nothing, because it's all available online these days, including, you know, classes at Harvard and Oxford and all these other places that you can take online. I've taken them. They're not that great, but you can take them. There is much better information available if you learn how to think for yourself, ask the right questions, and move forward at your own pace and using your curiosity as your driver. And so my curiosity is interested in how to survive. And in learning how to survive in this environment, I came across a cornucopia of information that shows how the Rockefellers not only founded the General Education Board and infiltrated the National Education Association, but how they have a higher agenda. Like, they have an internationalist agenda. So they're the reason that they have all this interest in public schooling and diplomacy through the Council on Foreign Relations, which is all built with Standard Oil money, which is borrowed from the Rothschild Empire, right? I have 20 books in front of me that are biographies and autobiographies by the Rothschild family. So I've been reading through the history of international bankers for the last three centuries, their works at least. I've been doing it for 10 years, but there's three centuries of credible first-person narratives where they're telling you that this is how the world is run and this is how they do it. They're just not advertising that truth to us in public schools or on any of the public media, you know, the corporate media that's out there, because it's all meant to take advantage of unwitting dupes. And I'm just saying, everybody's better than that. Nobody deserves that situation. Being lied to is just as serious as, you know, the government trying to stab you in the back in many ways, because it is denying you the right of liberty and life and the attainment of happiness. It ensures that you're forever pursuing it, paying taxes all the way, doing all these things that were set up as harnesses on human resources to derive our energy, to take away our rights, so that few people can conquer the many and not have to work, because it's a plunder mentality versus those of us who are honest, hardworking producers.
Well said, well said.
There's a nomenclature for it, too, because we really can't speak effectively about the ruling class, the non-elected rulers, the, you know, the elite. What do we call them? Who are they? How would we specifically describe them definition-wise in form and function?
I think that's another thing, too, that people get distracted with, is the whole us, you know, the whole us versus them thing. They get into that kind of mindset. That's, I guess we shouldn't say distracted, but off-putting to a lot of people. Like, when you encountered these names like Rothschild and Rockefeller, but when you're in that environment of instruction, you know, like the school setting, you don't think to take different paths of where you're.
Well, no, why would you? Because Rockefeller spent so much money that the school system that was created and continues to perpetuate today worships and honors him. If you pick up something from like Napoleon Hill or any of these other characters who were popular writers that were, you know, used in corporate society, they worship the Rockefellers. The things that they say, I've never heard higher compliments out of people. I mean, it's sycophantic behavior, because instead of thinking for themselves, they thought, oh, well, the person with a lot of money, they must know what they're doing and they have a great idea, so let's not question it. And the reason that, you know, people, individuals with immense wealth have psychopathic tendencies is because there's no one around them willing to say no to the money. And therefore, if you are only hearing yes all day, every day, that's going to have an effect on your moral capabilities juxtaposed to other natural human beings who are just trying to survive here, right? So there's all these different things that are intermixed in society that you have to deal with as an adult. You know, you have to be responsible and deal with these. But as a child, you're adversely afflicted by all these different things because the adults around you don't have this information, because we're all part of a servile class that has been given a very different level of education. It's a level of education that's not there to make us free people, because that's the other use of praxis. Praxis was an occupation or an activity engaged in by free individuals. And so it's this cyclical process of experimental learning that is indicative of the free individual on this planet. And if they have taken that away, starting with doing it in our school system and reinforcing it through corporate media, then that is their way of taking away our freedom without having to use a foreign army or without using all these other mechanisms that you would think invading force, let's defend the country. No, they were able to come in not through the back door. They dug up through the basement. They came right up through the big foundations that it had been sponsored by the money that they seeded this country with. So the original ideas of the founding fathers of America, they were imperfect, but they also knew that they were imperfect and left it open to change. But what they did not plan for was the eventual subversion of our education system. And then once that education system had been outsourced to people who were not individual thinking, not self-reliant thinking, not producers of honest work, they are plunderers of honest work. They didn't foresee that. And because that blind spot existed, it has taken America almost 160 years to really recognize and start to see something is wrong. And now people are looking for the answer of why is it wrong? Like, how did it get to be this way? And we're finding the answers slowly but surely. And there is an incredible tapestry of history that is available that shows just how corrupt our education system got, and step by step how it became that corrupt. So you can see the importation of the Prussian education system into first Boston, and these are all school areas that are being controlled by secret societies. And then they roll it out through other religious secret societies and create compulsory schooling. So America was not always this way, and we have to, you know, just consider that the slow change that they have instilled over the past 160 years is still coming to a crescendo today, because what you see is massive unemployment. You see trust in politicians that are not even lying through their teeth. They're lying through their open mouths, and people cannot recognize the difference between the truth which exists and the illusions which are being spewed using cleverly concocted, sophisticated rhetoric that the politicians. So it gets back to the simple ideas. You are best suited to control your own mind, to make your own decisions in your life, and not somebody that you've never met, that doesn't have any interest in you, that doesn't live the same way that you do, doesn't have to work for their living. They are looking to be professional politicians. They are looking to pull the wool over people's eyes. And so if you stop believing that someone else can make better decisions for you in those cases and start to work as a community of individuals who voluntarily work together, you can still solve the same problems that you've been waiting for government to solve for years and years and years. But it starts with individuals putting question marks at the end of their sentences, not being so declarative and thinking that what we've been given through schooling is knowledge. It's anything but. And so it's those question marks that lead to conversations. And as long as we can converse compassionately, using logic and reason and objective reality, that which exists, we can all have peaceful communication and really get to the substance of what's going on. But what they want us to do is to react emotionally and shut down and frustration and aggression and confusion and all these things that occur and exist before you ask the questions, before you observe the situation and remove the contradictions. It's only through the organization in your own mind that you can have coherent, cogent thoughts and communications, you know, being made to others. And that's where we have to go. You know, like I said, it's been years since 9/11 happened. We still have not gotten together as I haven't seen a whole community, let alone a whole state or a whole country, come to terms with that event. It's a traumatic event. People have a lot of emotions attached to it. And I agree, it is tragic. But what's more tragic is that the liars and murderers and thieves who created that whole event and leveraged it to the hilt and made billions of dollars off of it have yet to encounter the least bit of public resistance. They're still worshipped as heroes. And the sooner that people get to figure out who were the predators and who were the prey and separate yourselves from the predators, the better we'll all be, because those questions haven't been asked and answered. And until more individuals come together and do that, we're going to continue to encounter escalating tyranny in this country. And it's going on around the world. Agenda 21 has 8,000 cities around the world all conspiring against their citizens who have no say in what's going on in their communities. It's affecting our schools. It's affecting your water supply. It's affecting food supply. It's affecting economics. Every aspect of our lives is all tied into this. And 9/11 is just one day in the 60-year plan of bringing that Agenda 21 to light, where people are starting to see its effects today. But you've got one third of the houses in this country on smart meters. You've got one third of the power plants in this country shut down. And you've got another third of this country on welfare. So that much dependence on the state is never a good thing. And in America, it never should have gotten to be this way in the first place. But now that we recognize it is here, it's time we all took a break from watching Dancing with the Stars, watching people turn left all day for 500 miles, and watching sports teams thinking that we're part of that team. You're not part of that team. You are an individual, and you need to learn how to live your life. And that's what I am in the process of learning every day for myself.
Well, it sounds like you're calling for a revival of logic, you know, the processor of your brain, because that's essentially what's been moved. It's like now it's just you get input, output. And if people don't have that language, you know, to articulate, like you said, to articulate their frustrations and or anxieties or whatever, then it's just going to turn into anger and fear, and you'll be stuck in a corner.
Well, I think the tragedy of it is that we have this information available to us. It's in libraries. It's online. You know, for instance, Aristotle wrote a book called On the Soul, and I was interested because I was like, oh, well, let's see what he thinks the soul is. He says the soul is your ability to use your mind to ask questions about what you're observing and to take action. So really, when someone is outsourcing their soul, when someone is selling their soul, when someone's soul is being stolen, it is their thinking that is being outsourced or sold or stolen. And so thinking is one of the most right. And that's that's the divine aspect of life, is your ability to think or not to think. That is your choice here in this involuntary situation we're all experiencing. So you do have a level of control, but you're not going to gain control in this situation. You're not going to gain equilibrium. You're not going to gain peace or serenity by not thinking in this situation. Life is a survival game. It's been going on a long time before we all realized it's a survival game. Now, there's a few people on this planet who are told from a very young age, it's a survival game, but you're on the top, that you're the apex predator, and that you are justified by Darwin and Calvin and all these other people to rule over others. And the rest of us who are never aware that there exist people like that or belief systems that allow them to plunder from us are the unwitting servants until we start to formulate questions and look for ourselves, use our five senses, get those percepts, form concepts, organize that together, remove the contradictions, communicate, and take action. It's not complex. It doesn't take you years and years and years of compulsory schooling to learn it, and they're not going to teach you that in one of those places. So once you've escaped compulsory schooling, you have the opportunity, and I say the responsibility and the obligation, to learn how to use your mind to help yourself, to help your family, to help your friends. And I think that's the way that we can all peacefully move forward and make 9/11 a day of, yes, it's a day of memory, and you should consider what it means. But it's not a day of tragedy any day past the point where we all start to realize what it was, why it continues to be the underlying theme of all of our foreign and domestic activities with respect to government. Until we ask those questions, until we make those realizations, 9/11 will be a day of tragedy. It'll continue to be a day of tragedy. But somewhere, I hope, maybe way off in the future, it's remembered because it was the single foremost event that allowed billions of people around the world to experience a political awakening of consciousness. And by political, I'm talking about their role in this environment as individuals. And when we voluntarily come together, we become a community or a city or a state. And those ideas of politics that you see on TV, that is the antithesis of politics. They rule us by redefining the terms that are meant to make us free. And that's why you should get to know the language that you use every day. Understand the word freedom had to come at some point when slaves were created, because before then, everybody was free. And so when you trace back through history, the origins of these words, the definitions of these words, you start to have a higher definition, understanding, a perspective, and appreciation that is useful in everyday life that you can use for the rest of your life. But you are not going to get that just by listening to others tell you how it is. You need to learn how to ask the questions, and that's how I got here.
Yeah, it does seem like.
Yeah, I'm not sorry for anything that happened to get me here. It's just a very non-traditional journey. It's not something that I planned for. You know, I call these things unscheduled meetings. We're all taking unscheduled meetings all the time. It's having a method to get through these unscheduled meetings, whether it be an accident or a job loss or, you know, any of the other things that disturb our everyday life. You know, life's what happens while you're making plans. You have to be able to deal with the unknown and all the frustration and the confusion that we're presented with every day. And once you have a consistent process to deal with that, it makes it much easier because now you're not dealing with 100 different problems. You're dealing with 100 different applications of the same method, which makes it a lot easier because you know you're always prepared to deal with the unknown. And that gives you at least a chance to get to some place where you can experience happiness consistently.
Yeah, yeah, reviving that intellectual inquiry, that's what did it. I know that's what did it for me. I mean, when I came into contact with a lot of this information initially, like a lot of people, I was frightened, first of all, you know, and then didn't really know what to do for a while, kind of had to sit on it. I mean, when you come to that realization that, wow, I've been lied to, and, you know, nobody ever tells you that, oh, wow, laws don't exist, say the media doesn't have to lie to you. Oh, really? Well, I always kind of thought they were. Like all these assumptions that you had about authorities and institutions, even the way that you protest and the way you direct your activism, most people direct it through like institutionally approved forums. And rather than, you know, just sitting down and having an open dialogue with somebody.
I choose my activism based on not what everyone else does, but what do I think needs to be done in this situation and what can I do to effectively bring that about? In my case, what I see is that people are getting poisonous, toxic media and they need to be provided with a clean, nutritious, healthy alternative that contains primary sources and is based in objective reality. And so what I do every day is a function of working through that fear that I encountered the first couple steps of this journey. But the idea is that by learning in a not so trial and error way, you can really cut down that fear and get back to living your life, understanding and continuing to integrate what you learn as a daily process, as a daily habit and a method, because you can stay in that fear process forever. You can be scared of reality forever, or you can just take some easy steps and get right down to it. And then, you know, you'll say, wow, I can't believe that I was so scared to leave the illusion and get to the reality, because the illusion was only preventing me from actually having any traction. And so if people think that they're spinning wheels every day, you know, proverbially or metaphorically in their lives, there is a way to have traction. And fortunately for us, like, we don't all have to experience the fact that we've all been lied to. We don't have to experience that as individuals feeling alone. There's, you know, some people go to a movie and they experience it with a couple hundred other people who are experiencing that realization at the same time. You can do it through a podcast and thousands of people all over the world over a series of weeks will have that realization. So there's all sorts of different ways that you can get it out there. But the idea is that by creating media that helps people step into reality in a non-fearful way, in a way that where I'm not saying, hey, I'm Chicken Little and the sky is falling. The situation is serious, but fear is not going to help any of us deal with what's going on. So we need to be calm and patient and very compassionate when interacting with people who have not yet had the time or invested the time to look for themselves, because their whole life is in a precarious situation, because then they suddenly realize that they've made hundreds of thousands or millions of decisions that weren't of their own thinking. And so we just have to put the question mark between the stimulus and the reaction. They control us by removing the question in between. When you receive a stimulus, you question it. If you don't, you're going to receive that and say, oh, that's fact. And that's how they control us. It is that simple to break free. But, you know, it took me 10 years to make it that simple. So it's a process that you have to work every day. And I am, as of yet, still learning.
Well, it took me a college education up to the last a very senior year to, you know, understand that, wow, it is a language and I do have to redefine these terms and notice the contradictions within these terms and come to identify these things in a way that I can actually retain it rather than this in and out, you know, fear programming essentially and social indoctrination to institutional authority. I think the schooling system really does set you up for a work in the corporate compartmentalized world. and that, you know, you got to stay. You can even use those institutions to your advantage. Like college libraries have community passes. You can go and look, you know, look up first edition prints of these books that you were talking about, and access all that information, sit down and read it yourself, if that's the way you want to go about it, or go through different forms of media, like as you also mentioned, the podcasts and videos. It's you're right. Like we're incredibly informed now, and we have many avenues, which is probably why all this crazy internet legislation is coming out. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of positive. There's a lot of positive things going on right now.
Last summer, when I interviewed John Taylor Gatto for the Ultimate History Lesson, which is a 5-hour interview with John, he's expounding upon his life as a public school teacher who became a whistleblower to show that the public compulsory education system is corrupted, and that he didn't want to hurt children anymore by taking away their volition and wiping out their future. So he dedicated the next 20 years of his life to writing a variety of books, which I encountered during my journey. And what I can say is that from watching the Ultimate History Lesson first person, because I was the guy asking the questions in the interview, I was learning, even though I thought I knew a lot about him, I read all his books, I was learning from what he was saying as we went through. And what I'm realizing as I was editing it several months afterwards, while we were making the film post-production, was that the highest quality education has been available for centuries for free, because they're not charging you to get into the public library, and the public libraries that we have today are not the same quality as public libraries of the past. The ones we have today were all endowed to us by Andrew Carnegie, who saw fit to provide this superficial gloss on the world events so that people could go there and they're like, well, if it's not at the library, it must not exist. And so there's a double-edged sword, and the way that Gatto explains it through this interview process is that it's about coming to learn to see the world for yourself and recognizing that until you learn to think for yourself, that someone else is going to write the script that you're acting out, whether it's public school or whatever. But at a certain point, you can make the realization and take the reins over your life. You can start to write your own script, and you might start by asking questions. You might start by going to your school library. You might start by going to your local library or local historical society and learning about what parts of history the local land where you grow up that you see as your community has been part of. And then just follow life's conversation from there. I mean, there's a whole beautiful unfolding that's going on all over the place, and it only pertains to us in an adverse way when we refuse to participate as individuals in it. So when there's, you know, a large percentage of the population on the planet not participating in the curriculum that nature's laying out here and not doing the learning every day, that's going to have adverse effects on not only those of us who are thinking, but everyone who's not thinking. And so the group of people who has the most information at their beck and call, and it's that information that they hide from the public, which gives them their power and influence, and that's your money gap. It's all based around information. Knowledge is power when it's used effectively and directed at certain means. The people that we're up against as far as the non-elected ruling class, they are highly organized. They have been well acquainted with how human beings work for thousands of years. They train us much the same way as they train fleas. In fact, there's a great part where John talks about how to train fleas, and because he had realized that the process of training fleas is not actually training fleas. That's a misnomer. They are identified for their characteristics and put to work accordingly. And there's a process of breaking their will where you have to put the fleas in a jar and you put the lid on the jar. And after a couple hours of jumping around, the fleas discover they can't jump out. They discover learned helplessness. And then forevermore, they will be docile servants. John realized that he was playing a critical role in that process and extracted himself from there. He retired from public schooling as the New York City Public School Teacher of the Year and New York State Public School Teacher of the Year, and resigned in the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal. So there are things that we can learn on our own. I didn't have to go to public school to meet John Taylor Gatto, and his work has been some of the most prolific influence among, you know, the thousands of books that I've gone through and read and studied. So to say that this one person can make a difference in your life, I'm not speaking about magic. I'm speaking about you being able to go to YouTube, type in the Ultimate History Lesson, and sit down with John for a couple hours and listen to what he has to say. If you're interested in why this country is falling down and can't get up, you're going to find the answers in that interview. Now, I'll say the hours 3, 4, and 5 are the most exciting, but you need to watch hours 1 and 2 to have the format of the story and what he's talking about, because it definitely does evolve in a light direction as he talks. So for those, you know, anyone listening around Spokane or anywhere else on the internet, I highly recommend the work of John Taylor Gatto, and The Ultimate History Lesson is the name of the DVD set.
Oh, yeah, I would really encourage anyone listening to pick up The Ultimate History Lesson. And just before you go, do you want to talk about, aren't you running a little bit of a fundraiser for John? Didn't he run into some health problems?
It's called the John Taylor Gatto Recovery Project, and the details would be, we filmed the interview with him last summer, last July, and about 3 weeks afterwards, he had a stroke, and he's still in the process of recovering from the stroke. The details for the fundraiser are on theultimatehistorylesson.com/donate, and if you're able to contribute or help out in any way, we all very much appreciate it, because we'd like to see him continue to write and continue to speak and continue to share his experience.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Well, thanks for talking with us today, Rich. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Van, and thank you to everyone listening in Spokane and beyond.